Hello! Thank you so much for listening to our show. We're going to jump right into things with very little prelude, but before we begin, there are a few things I want to let you know. First off, this is The Voyage Forevermore. It is an actual play RPG podcast, meaning that we'll be collaboratively telling a story by way of playing a tabletop RPG. Specifically, we're playing a game called Tavern Tales, which is a free Creative Commons licensed game I highly recommend. I'm not going to get too deep into the rules unless they come up during play, but what you need to know is this. Tavern Tales doesn't have any concept of character class or species or anything like that. Instead, players build their characters out of something called traits, which are basically descriptions of interesting things your character can do. Those range from simple things like being able to shoot lasers or breathe underwater, up to really wild stuff, like every time you walk into a room, you can announce that you know one person there and roll to see how much they like you. Or every time you see something die, you can send its soul to your deity and then barter to get something in return. As a result, there is a super wide range of stuff characters can do in this game, and they can get pretty interesting and pretty wild. Hopefully that'll be really cool. Anyway, we're gonna jump right into things. Again, thank you so much for listening. Is anybody else, like, lightly terrified?
Yep.
Yeah, very, very much.
Definitely. I just don't want to stick my foot in my mouth.
Awesome. Great, great, great. Because I feel that terror.
Yeah, it's there.
Let's do it. Start the game.
Yeah, here we fucking go, y'all. 2 weeks ago, the three of you boarded a small ship. You are the only passengers, and there are only three crew members. There's Captain Trundle, a short guy with a bluish tinge to his skin who you think might be a gnome or something. He's trained in some sort of captaining magic that lets him control and maintain most of the ship by himself. He has an apprentice, a young elf named Juliet Scrum. She's been in training for a while, but every time the captain has let her take over the ship so far, the ride's gotten considerably bumpier. The captain still has full faith in her, though. The last crew member is a woman named Octavia. She's some kind of air-breathing octopus and the ship's cook. Your time on board has been somewhat unpleasant. Your rooms are small and cramped, most of them are windowless. They smell like smoke, seawater, vomit, and a few things that do not bear mentioning. You're on your way to this place called Thornpaw. There's a giant nation across the ocean called Coal, and this is their only colony on a new continent. Like a thorn in a lion's paw, get it? Anyway, it's a small village, maybe 100 people on a good day, and a lot of days much less. There aren't a lot of people who make their way this far out, but I'm sure you've all got your reasons. A few hours ago, Captain Trundle announced that you'd be docking in Thornpaw around sunset tonight. You've all made your way to the ship's deck to watch Juliet do her absolute best to steer the ship into port. It does not go amazing. Anyway, I feel like that's a good time to introduce both yourselves and your characters. Who would like to start?
Alex?
Hi, I'm Alex Kershey. I'm an actor, and I am one of the players. I'm playing Admiral Fizzwig Burblebon, and I live in New York City.
I'm Gwyneth Williams. I am currently working at a bookstore in New York City, although not in the same area of New York City that Alex is. And I am playing Lady Rory Olivia Pippendower, a bugbear.
Holy hell. That's so good.
Oh, I'm very excited.
I'm so pleased. My name is Abby Armato. I am a freelance theater artist and storyteller in Chicago. I'll be playing Bruce J. Oakley.
Oh, and my name is Colton Flick. I am from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I will be GMing this game. Would you also like to introduce your various characters? Anything that would have become apparent? I think there are literally six people on this boat, and three of them are y'all.
Oh, sure. Nice.
So I think over the course of 2 weeks, you've gotten to know each other at least somewhat.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Does the boat have sails?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Alex, you want to start us off again?
No, I don't.
No? Okay. I can do that if you want. So Rory Pippendower, who goes by Pip, is a bugbear, although due to various reasons, she does not believe that she is. She believes that she is just a very hairy, big human, and she is very burly, as, you know, bugbears usually are. She's got lots of ginger fur and wears a very utilitarian outfit for running around in. Although she has the title of lady, she's not very ladylike. She's loud. She likes to sort of ask the crew about their adventure. She's very excitable, very adventurous, hence the fact that she's on the boat. And she's likely been spending her time, probably needling the captain for stories, whether he wants to tell or not.
Wonderful. I think the captain definitely wants to tell. He's a strange old dude who I think is eager to talk about his past experiences. Alex, would you like to introduce your character and what you have been up to?
Of course. So when you look at Admiral Fizwig Birbalbon, you see a distinguished figure, 4'10 in stature, gazing at the horizon. His clothes consist of a vibrant, deep maroon cloth. Maroon pleated pants fold over his long, folded over legs, a red vest over a sloping belly fastened with golden threaded buttons, with a blue shirt beneath. Over this is a magnificent jacket, also in deep maroon, with long arms and golden tasseled epaulets adjacent to the sharp gold-edged collar and other gold trimmings. On his head is an ornamented red naval cap with a golden band and a silver and gold badge of rank pinned to its sloping center, clearly part of an off-duty professional uniform. All of this, you notice, surrounds the frame of what seems to be a large bipedal toad resting on his haunches. His skin is mottled and brown in a deliberate and symmetrical way. Large bumps adorn the space on his hairless head behind large flat eardrums, which he uses to hear. Above his broad, seriously set mouth are small, wide-set nostrils, and on opposite sides of his head, large eyes with wide, vertical black tapered pupils surrounded by golden-flecked iris. His arms, crossed behind his back, although I guess it's probably sclera, his arms, crossed behind his back, unfold and fold again in front of him, and you see three long tapering fingers and a thumb on each hand, each ending in a slight broad pad. The inside of his arms, neck, and underbelly, and the base of his four-toed feet, are a lighter off-white color, and as he breathes, the wide sac under his lip inflates and deflates with a slight contented chuffing sound. His eyes wet themselves as he pulls them into his head, and a thin eyelid passes over them. He resets his broad, flat, heavy tongue in his mouth as he inspects the rigging of the ship as it is being raised. He has spent these weeks chatting with the crew, also swapping various stories of times over the sea and adventures and being and war and okay, let me reset that. He has spent these weeks also swapping stories with the crewmates, times at sea. He's been learning and also teaching various sort of seafaring games to the cook. Him and the cook have been playing games. Does that make sense? That makes sense that he and the cook would be playing games?
Yeah, totally. The cook is this woman who is an octopode, which is not an existent fantasy race, but in the hit video game Dungeon Crawl Stone Soup, you can play as an octopus, and the plural they use is octopodes. And I thought that octopode was a cool fantasy race.
I love it.
And I didn't learn that octopode was just me mispronouncing. It's just me mispronouncing the plural of octopus. But now it's a cool fantasy race because this is my game and I can do that. So it's a woman named Octavia who is an octopode.
Yeah, I love it.
Right on. So he's been playing games with people, been figuring out their stories, and generally helping out around the ship as is possible for a man of his advanced age. You have heard that he is in his late 60s.
Beautiful. Great. Abby, would you like to introduce your character?
Absolutely. So Bruce J. Oakley is one dashing young dwarf. He is in robes and in a tunic underneath those robes. He has a fantastic walking stick with a very ornate head of a wolf on top of it that he uses to walk around the ship more as a way of like hearing the sound of the wooden staff clacking against the ship floor to announce his presence rather than for any sort of mobility need. He has a family sigil pinned to his cloak. You recognize the family sigil as one of prestige, but also of mystery, just to add some angst to this character, you know. And he spends a lot of his time meditating, being very contemplative.
Well, wait. Yeah, it's contemplative. That's what it is.
Great. Meditating, and being contemplative, or however Alex just said it.
Wait. Now I am genuinely questioning it.
Contemplative.
Contemplative.
Contemplative. There it is. The GM says, and so it shall be. looking out over the water crashing by. Yeah. Oh, and his name is Bruce, pronouns he, him, and you have heard that he goes by BJO, but like, you've only heard this in like, rumors that surround him as a member of this, like, mysterious, large family.
When you say that this sigil brings prestige and also mystery, when you say that, do you mean that it is recognizable as just something high class, but they don't know more than that, or?
I would say it's more recognizable from, like, a folklore perspective rather than a class perspective.
Gotcha.
I don't think this family is of necessarily a higher class, but certainly is a large network of family members scattered throughout the known world. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good. Okay. Anything else we need to know about each other's characters before we sort of begin?
He fought in wars, as many of his stories involve.
Cool. Sounds good. So it is roughly sunset as your ship pulls into port. Juliet Scrum and Captain Trundle make their way to the deck, and the captain sort of lets Juliet take this. The ship is piloted by some sort of magic, and she is clearly not very good at it. So it's a little bit dicey as you get into port, and you do sort of make a pretty swift contact with the dock a few times. And the captain keeps turning to her and being like, oh, not quite, but very close. And she redirects and tries to pull the ship back into place. As you glide up to the dock, you can see two people are standing there and waiting for you. One is a woman who looks like she is human and average height. She has long black hair tied in a tight braid, and she's wearing what you assume is ceremonial armor. You assume it's ceremonial because it is polished to an absolute shine. You could see your reflection, even from this distance. While she seems to be fairly small and thin, the armor is enormous, and it is coupled with a giant broadsword, which she has jammed into the dock next to her as a sort of walking stick. It looks like at least an inch of the blade is buried in the wood. Next to her is someone in a full plague doctor's outfit with the mask, cloak, hat, etc., who looks absolutely terrified. They're having some sort of tense conversation as you arrive, but they break it off as you approach. The woman turns to you with a broad and slightly fake smile, waits for you to get within earshot, and then looks up and says, "Hello! Welcome to Thornpaw. My name is Countess Abelard. I'm in charge here. And I am judge, jury, and executioner, so stay in line." She looks sort of relieved that someone actually laughed at this joke. The physician standing next to her kind of elbows her. She coughs and continues and says, "It is so good to see new faces in Thornpaw. That's a bit of a rarity, and we're so excited to have you. But I do have to admit, things are a little tense at the moment. Not to alarm you, but there's been an outbreak of a sort of disease in the town, and most of the diseased individuals seem to come directly off boats. So for the time being, I'm going to put you in a soft quarantine that lasts the duration of the night, and before that begins, I'm going to have the physician here come on board and check to see if anyone may be infected already."
"Of course. I've definitely lived harder nights than this."
Anybody else want to weigh in on that?
It's just Alex's voice was so good. Quinn, do you have a voice?
Yes, I do.
Oh my god. You guys, it's so good.
Yeah, Pip sort of draws herself up and says, "Oh, I've been through worse than roughing it a bit. I don't mind just lying about for a couple nights if that's what it takes. I don't want any messy bug getting me when I could die at the hands of some great beast."
Wonderful.
It was also so good. Bruce just nods.
Great. The physician looks over at Countess Abelard, and she kind of has to like shove him closer to the boat, and he keeps trying to turn around, and she shoves him up the gangplank and up onto the ship, and then she backs up herself and lets him go to work. You can see that he sort of is drawn up on himself. I have this like GMing tendency to just physically act out everything, so I'm standing here physically acting out him like twitching around.
We should make just a video of you and you alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've been doing weird twitching for the last 5 minutes, and now I realize that you cannot see that, so it is not helpful to this performance.
Don't worry, I do the exact same thing when I voices in DMing, and it makes some pretty crazy faces, I've been told, so no worries.
So he wanders up the gangplank, totally shivering, and you can see that he has this full mask, this full hat, black cloak, everything. You cannot see any skin exposed. He's got these long gloves. There's this sort of clinking as he walks up. He has this rope belt tied around him that has a bunch of like potions that you recognize as probably some kind of health potion in glass bottles around this belt. But he's holding a cotton swab in one hand and this mortar and pestle in the other. And as he makes his way up onto the ship, he looks at all of you very frantically and says, "Everyone, please clear out. One person at a time. Don't come close to me. Don't breathe on me. Please don't sneeze or cough or anything of that nature. You come up first." And he points to you, Fizzwig, sort of gestures for you to come stand in front of him.
"I assure you, my good friend, you are going to be just okay, and you're going to make it through this. I'm sure of it. Of course, I will offer you no trouble."
"Okay, thank you. Stand still, very still, please." And he dips this cotton ball in the mortar and pestle and kind of moves it around. There's some kind of like clear liquid in the base of the container. And then he reaches out with his hands shaking and draws it across your forearm. Just kind of, yeah, like wetting your forearm with whatever this liquid is. And he waits a couple seconds and nothing happens. And then he sighs this huge sigh of relief and is like, "Whew. Okay, you are healthy for the time being. If you could step aside and let the next person come up."
"I appreciate your good words about my health, friend."
"Right, yeah." "Ha ha. Thank you. Okay. You, the dwarf, please."
Should I follow you?" I gesture to our host.
The countess sort of backs a little bit further away from the boat and says, Actually, for the time being, if you could stay on the boat for the evening, I'm sure everything's fine.
Oh, the quarantine's on the boat. I'm sorry, I was quite confused. Yes. I must admit, I'm not as young as I once was.
That's just fine. Please stay on the boat. Do not come off. I will kill you.
I understand.
And the physician points to Bruce and says, "You dwarf, next up, please stand in front of me."
Bruce takes a step towards the doctor. "I was worried this would be a little more invasive. I'm glad to see it's not." And he strokes his beard, eyeing the doctor up. And I'm assuming the doctor is, like, probably still quivering to some extent.
Yeah, 100%.
Great, great, great. Then maybe there's, like, a snide little smile watching this doctor be a little afraid. And then Bruce throws his cloak over his one shoulder and delicately rolls up the sleeve of his robe and lets the doctor do the procedure.
Great. Yeah, the physician leans towards him and says, "Not terribly invasive. I would like to avoid touching you if I can."
"I would enjoy the same thing."
"Wonderful. We see eye to eye on this particular issue." And he draws the cotton swab across your forearm, again, waits a few seconds and nothing really happens. And then he points to Pip and says, "You next. In fact, you stay where you are. Everyone stay where you are. I will come to you from now on." With extreme trepidation, the physician makes his way to Pip and draws that cotton swab across her forearm. He stares at the resulting mark for a few seconds, but nothing really happens. He repeats the process with Juliet, staring at it just as intently, and nothing happens again. He moves on to Octavia, who, as an octopode, has no real forearms, but he swabs her head, waits a little bit, and again, nothing. He seems a little bit hopeful as he approaches Captain Trundle, the last person on the ship. He draws the cotton swab across Captain Trundle's arm. A few seconds pass, and that mark turns a deep red. Immediately, the physician drops his supplies and jumps backwards. At least one of the potions at his hip falls off and shatters on the ship's deck. He yelps, "Sick, sick, very sick. Oh, wow. So everyone, stay totally calm. Stay totally calm, but stay on the boat for, like, ever, maybe? Thank you, goodbye."
I take a deep breath and I start holding my breath.
Okay. The physician sprints down off the gangplank and hides behind Countess Abelard, who, with her armor, is a fairly, like, imposing figure, so he's pretty much completely hidden. And she says, "That is terribly unfortunate. I hope you will all be fine. In fact, I'm sure you will be. But if you could, for the evening, remain on the boat, I would recommend staying away from the captain, if possible."
Might I ask how recently this has begun to affect people coming to the town?
The last, four boats, so that's, about 2 months.
Listen, this man, not to, butt my head in, but this man I spoke with many a time, he is not sick at all. He's hearty as a horse.
The Countess says, "Well, it is possible to become ill after not being ill for some time. It seems that the test is positive and it has not failed thus far, so I'll trust the physician, unless you have some sort of medical license."
No. Do I look like I have a medical license? I've got the opposite, mate. I've got a license to kill. Not actually.
The Countess says, "Right, I actually do have a license to kill, so I could kill you, but I won't, so long as you stay on the boat."
"Right, well, I'll stay on the boat, I suppose, but before you leave, I have to show you this great, great kill I made the other day. He's right on my hip, it'll take just a second." And she sort of fiddles around with the very obvious severed werewolf head on her hip.
Can we talk for a second about this? Can I ask you like a logistics question?
Yes.
How you severed this werewolf's head at most? No, at the earliest 2 weeks ago.
Oh, it's been preserved. Yeah, no. It's been preserved not great. It's a little stinky. It's a little rotted.
So it has not been preserved, is what you're saying.
It's been preserved badly, shall we say. It's sort of like it's a bad taxidermy work.
Okay, okay.
And she sort of hoists it over and she's like, "Now this might, he looks a little more sick than the captain, I'd say."
This is a great time for us to introduce the central mechanic, I think, of Tavern Tales. So Gwen has just used the first trait of the game. Gwen, can you tell us what that trait is?
Yes, that is it's my trophy trait. It's an interaction trait. And it is, after overcoming a worthy challenge, keep something from the ordeal as a trophy and write it on your character sheet. At any point, cross off a trophy and openly display it. Others instantly recognize the trophy, understand what you had to do to get it. They will treat me with profound adoration, respect, or fear.
I'm fairly confident that the third option there was fear, which we may or may not have already elicited in a lot of people right now.
And you are showing Countess Abelard this severed werewolf head that you have killed.
She's more expecting everyone to be as excited about it as she is, as opposed to, you know, like, oh shit, put that down. But yeah, she's showing off. She's a show off.
Wonderful. Yeah, Countess Abelard kind of like walks to the very edge of the dock to get a closer look at this, and she looks up at you and says, my god, is that a werewolf?
Sure is. Look at him. Look, he's alive, just reaching for you, and she sort of puppets him.
Oh god.
That is absolutely horrific. Did you kill that?
I did. With my own hands. Well, in my body, but this point.
My god. Well, I'll say this. We could certainly use people of your skills in Thornpaw, and I sincerely hope that you'll join us. I'm entirely confident that you'll make it through the night. When you get off the boat, please, please, by all means, come by my house. I would love to speak with you further.
Might I ask you a logistical question?
Yes.
Perhaps I don't know as much about this as you do, but would it not be more likely the case that by staying quarantined with somebody who might be infected by this illness, that we'd be more likely to get it? If we don't have it now, doesn't that mean that we should go into quarantine elsewhere?
Typically, it seems to spread. Once someone is infected and the disease progresses, we tend to find that people who were not infected but were in the same area turn up with symptoms.
Do you have maybe a smaller second boat that we could rope ourselves over to so that we could leave the captain in his quarters and perhaps spend more time quarantined elsewhere so that it would be less likely to spread to us?
I suppose we might be able to find something. Thornpaw isn't excessively large. There aren't a lot of unused spaces, but maybe we can find something. At the very least, I could see if you could perhaps stay on the dock or something of that nature. Juliet from behind you interrupts and says, I don't mean to be rude, but I think we'll stay on the boat with the captain. If he's really that sick, I don't want him to be alone.
I sort of nod understandingly.
Cool. The Countess says, all right, I'll see if I can find somewhere for you to stay. In the meantime, don't move. And she grabs the physician by the scruff of the neck and drags him off the boat. As she passes by, her broadsword, which is still sort of stuck down into the board, she just sort of like rips it up out of the dock, and she sits on her back. So you've got like a few minutes until she comes back. Is there anything you want to do in that time?
Are you feeling okay, sir?
Oh, yes. I feel quite all right. I didn't think that I had anything. You know, I don't feel under the weather at all. No headache, no fever.
I wonder what that could possibly mean in this case.
What, are you going to explode into pimples, or...?
Please, Pip. Lady Pip.
Just Pip is fine. Do I look like a lady to you?
Well, all the same, status.
I'm not one.
Captain.
Yes?
I don't know how best to put this. Maybe you should go into your quarters and get some rest.
Yes, that seems quite reasonable. Perhaps whatever it is will pass. He turns around and heads to his quarters. You can see that the captain has fairly pale skin. There's like a vague bluish tint to it, but that's normal. As he walks away, you can see that there is a section of the skin on the back of his neck that has a sort of creeping grayness to it. His skin is almost like desaturated in those areas. Anyway, he turns and walks through the door. The way the ship is arranged, you three have your rooms on one side of the ship, and they are accessed by a single door to the lower decks. Then there is a matching door on the opposite side of the ship that accesses the captain's quarters, Julia's, and Octavia's. Anything else y'all want to do right now?
I take a drink of water.
Cool. The Countess returns, sans physician at this point, and she looks up at you and says, all right, here's what I've worked out. There are very few unused places in Thornpaw, so I'll give you one of two options. You can either go to the home of the last person who was infected by this, because it is currently the only vacant building in the town, because they are, dead, or you can stay on this boat. Do you have a preference between those two options?
I will stay on the boat, thank you very much, as much as I do thank you very, very dearly for investigating for us. But that's, of course, me speaking for myself.
Oh, well, no, I'm staying on the boat. I'm not messing with someone with a big sword like that, stabbed in the middle of a piece of wood like that, and take me out in a second.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
the back of the captain's neck, it was getting progressively grayer. What does this entail, and what is the nature of this illness?
As I understand it, for most people, it is a slow disintegration. The physician has warned me that the disintegration can be occasionally destructive, so I recommend not being markedly close to the captain as his condition deteriorates.
You have found no solution to this illness?
In short, the time from detection to disintegration is very short, and once someone has disintegrated, there's very little for the physician to look into, and anything we do find takes 2 weeks to be sent back to Cole, assuming that a ship is there the next day.
So, should someone, like, go in after him with a dustpan and some, like, a broom and just sort of sweep him up, or...
Oh, please, Pip.
It's more of an ooze, as I understand it. I personally haven't gotten involved. I appreciate the physician's ability to handle that.
The physician, is he quite young?
No, he's in his mid-30s.
He seemed a little... extra worried for so yeah, well, perhaps green is a good word, but he seemed a little extra worried for somebody as well made out for the job as he, from a clothing perspective. Is he, has there been evidence that perhaps his get-up would not stop the spread of the disease?
No, I don't believe so. I think working with this particular illness has taken a bit of a toll on him. He was much more composed just a few weeks ago.
Really?
But it seems the longer he continues to attempt to solve this problem for us, the more it hurts him.
Does he have a sense of how it spreads?
As of yet, no, except that very typically people who are present during the time of infection eventually come down with the disease. It seems to have a strange incubation period or something. I'm not a doctor. I'm far from it.
Wait, so how long did you say we'd have to be quarantined here?
About 24 hours. If none of you have come down with anything by then, we will assume that you are fine.
How far away from the dock are we, like, physically? Like how far am I from her?
Like, maybe 10 feet.
Do you mind if I, and I, like, I gesture like I'm going to take one step forward?
Go right ahead.
And I kind of say quietly to her, are you saying that you are quite certain that the captain will die?
100%, yes.
Oh, that's quite sad.
It's unfortunate. What I can tell you is that in the past, when we contained people onto the ships, if they did not die the first night, they were never infected. When we did not, it was common for them to become infected at some point in the future. I can't explain that. I am far from a doctor, but it's what the physician recommends, and it seems to be resulting in a somewhat smaller body count.
Well, thank you for your candor.
So, if I may, I'm also not a doctor, but I'm curious, when did this start?
About 4 ships ago, so 2 months.
Yes, so not too long ago, but do we have any idea of the originals that brought this over? Is this a disease that they think has been, I don't know, caught at sea?
Yes, how many of that first ship were infected?
3. None while they were on the ship, all in their first days in port.
All in their first days in port, you say?
Yes, but the second ship where we attempted to quarantine, quite a few had it on board.
How long has the physician been in town, my friend?
Quite a while. As long as I have. So, 5-6 years.
Thank you.
Any further questions, or can I return home?
From me, I am done for now. Thank you. I don't know if anyone else wishes to speak to you, but I'm going to go look off the back of the ship. And I do so.
Wonderful. Anybody else have anything they want to ask her, or?
I think Pip just sort of shrugs her shoulders and says, well, I sure do hope this isn't my end, because that would be kind of embarrassing to have my goop sent back to my parents, wouldn't it? And then she sort of gives a nervous laugh and elbows Bruce in the side, I guess the shoulder.
Is Juliet still up here?
Juliet, I think, went through the door captain. Following Captain Trundle, yeah.
Yeah.
Octavia is still up here.
Okay.
Yeah, the Countess at Pip's joke says, I'm sure it won't be. And I am quite serious. We need people like you in Thornpaw. In the morning, please, by all means, come by my home. It is very hard to miss because there are not a lot of buildings here. And then she heads off the dock. Anything y'all want to do?
After she leaves,
mm-hmm.
I sort of, I call Octavia and possibly any others who want to come listen to the back of the boat.
Okay.
I am saying something important.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Octavia hops right on over there. She kind of tends to like crawl across the sort of like railings of the ship and says, what's wrong?
Do either of you guys come and listen to me or no?
I come and listen to you. It's a 6-person ship. I certainly come with you.
I think that I'm not one to... I spend a lot of time among people. I am an old man, as you know, and maybe age has made me paranoid, but there's something about that physician. Did you hear how she's worried about the ships? But the first people that were infected were already in the town when they were infected. And the physician, and only the physician, was able to tell whether or not anyone was infected or not.
That does seem a little odd.
I'm not saying that he's... I'm not suggesting anything in specific. There's just something that strikes me as odd about a gifted physician suddenly discovering an illness he cannot cure, and the fact that seemingly people only die if they don't follow instructions.
I would throw out that perhaps a physician who lives in a town of 100 people on a mostly unpopulated continent might not be the most skilled.
It's a good point. But then, did he devise that test himself? I don't know. There's just something off about it to me.
No,
but...
no. I hear you. I hear what you're putting down.
Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's nothing.
It does smack a little bit of conspiracy, dare I say. Hmm. Not that it would be exciting if that were true, but really, I understand your reservations about him.
Do I... Colton, mm-hmm. think that the captain is any good at his job? Like, have I, while watching the captain, appreciated the work that he has done as a captain?
Certainly, yeah. The captain has been at this job, like, nearly as long as you. He's probably older than you are.
Sure.
And so most of his job currently is actually training Juliet as sort of a...
Sure.
You know, his time in this job is coming to a close. But yeah, he seems to be very, very good at what he's doing.
I've seen men as good as him die countless times, but... It still is always, it's always a great loss. I think I should go say something to him and perhaps warn Juliet separately about what might happen if she's too close come his time.
Okay, good luck. I'm gonna stay out here for the time being.
I respect that. Do you have any, maybe we shouldn't eat, maybe we should wait.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's more than enough in the galley for me to
yes, but,
cook.
But if... If it is a normal illness and it is somewhere in the food or something, maybe we should refrain for the night.
Oh, that's a good point. She kind of scurries away. I'm sorry, unless one of you wants to say something to her.
No. I was just going to remark on maybe it's something in the water, something we've been drinking, something we... Well, it would help to find out where they were coming from, wouldn't it? Maybe they came from the same place that we... You know, shipped from.
Yeah, is this a routine run? Like, does this ship go back and forth between the two places routinely, and that's why she could time it based on that?
Yeah, this is literally the only way to get here, and literally the only thing this ship does is go back and forth from this port to the one you guys came from.
And this Captain Trundle, has been doing that this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so does he know about the illness then?
So he's probably experienced something with it before. There are like two ships because it's an even 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he's probably been there for like at least one iteration of some kind of illness.
All right. I go below deck. We don't necessarily have to rope with this interaction, mm-hmm. but I call Juliet. Is Juliet in the room with Captain Trundle or is she like outside the door talking to him?
Yeah, she's in the room. As soon as you go below deck, it is evident that his condition has deteriorated because you can hear him vocalizing that something is clearly wrong and painful.
Juliet, can I speak to you for a second? Captain, I promise I won't take it from you for long.
He does not respond to you. Looking down, you can see that gray patch on his skin has expanded to cover quite a lot of his skin and has deteriorated further to the point that it looks almost like a burnt marshmallow.
Sure.
That it is sort of like cracked through.
Cracking? Like cracking too? Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it even seems like it has that same like viscosity.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it's fairly upsetting. Juliet kind of steps aside away from him and slides out of the room.
I make sure to not touch her, but like not obviously to her. Juliet, supposedly there's going to be, he can't hear us, right?
Yeah. If he can, he wouldn't respond anyway, so.
Supposedly there's going to be a disintegration of sorts with him in a matter of minutes or hours, and you shouldn't be near him when it happens. You can stay with him if you wish until his condition worsens, but I would strongly advise against being near him when he meets his end, because...
It seems that there's nothing that can be done.
Well,
And you're a fine young talent, and I think that you could do very well as a captain yourself someday, and it would grieve this old man to see anything happen to you.
Yeah, I guess we might need a... I might not be an apprentice much longer.
It's going to be okay, my friend. Well, as okay as it can be. Sometimes in this life you see very difficult things, and you'll never be immune from it, but you'll learn things where you can, and you'll be able to survive because you're strong, and you are capable of deep strength.
Thank you. Here's hoping you're right.
And then I sort of speak up. Captain, you don't feel the need to respond to me. Of course, if you are too weak, but you have been a great man, and it has been a pleasure serving with you, and hopefully I will see you in the morning.
There's not really a clear response, except that he kind of like rolls over onto his side and his hand grips like one of the bedposts. And you notice that his entire hand is now this sort of blackened substance. The other thing you notice is that he is a gnome and his arm should not normally like be long enough to do that.
No.
So there's some sort of stretching. And I think Juliet notices that this is wildly wrong. And she kind of backs away from the door and says, I don't really want to leave him, but maybe it's better that I head upstairs. And she slips past you and heads on up. Anything else you want to do down here?
Sleep well, Captain. I'm sure she'll be back to see you in the morning.
And then I like, does he have like a light in there? Like a lantern?
Yeah, there's like an oil
lamp. I'll turn off the oil lamp and then I close the door, I guess.
Cool.
Oh, yikes. I go above and I try to tell people stories and like see if anybody's down for talking about things. I try and keep the mood as light as I can, but other than that, that's just a kind of general night thing. I do not sleep.
Cool.
Yeah, I think Pip is eager to sort of be distracted because she you know, as I said, she was probably got a lot of stories from the captain, and she's always eager to hear more stories. And she's pretty young, so this kind of is shaking her, but she's trying to tough it out. So she would be definitely down for story time.
I also ask Pip if she knows any sea shanties. And I teach her one, an old one from the old days if she does not know any.
Yeah, no, I think she doesn't.
I do it quietly and respectfully because there's a man dying beneath us, but at the same time I wanna make people's night easier, you know.
Yeah. No, I don't think she knows any sea shanties. She knows like some dumb poems. Yeah. But that's it.
Around like midnight or whatever, I also like make sure to take a temporary break from the like attempted lightness to like sort of say something good about the captain, and I kind of like, you know, respectfully take a moment and I sort of politely suggest that we all say something good about him as like a possibly last rite situation, you know.
I think right around when that's happening, it's about midnight, you've probably been quarantined for like a little over 6 hours. And around that time, when you are in the midst of the last rites, you've heard the captain occasionally moaning over the course of the night fairly softly. He moans again and it becomes sort of a scream, and it is loud to an extent that a human or gnome or whatever it is he is should not be able to be loud. Like you can feel it shaking the boards around you. And it slowly transitions from something that sounds essentially like a person yelling into a sort of dull roar that you can feel reverberating through the ship. And shortly after that, you hear the sound of cracking and splintering wood from somewhere down in the crew's quarters. What do you do?
I try to look at over the side of the boat to where his like quarters would be,
mm-hmm.
and see if there's any disturbance, like any disturbance in the outside of the wood. Like, is anything broken through?
It doesn't look like it from the outside. No.
Do we hear anything else?
Yeah. As you stand still and listen for a little while, you start to feel vibrations in the boards under you and hear this thumping from down under deck. Something moving around, something very heavy.
Did anyone mention anything about what happens after they turn into ooze?
I assumed after the goo they would disintegrate.
I think he's moving around down there.
That's what I think. Ooh.
It may be for the best for us to stay up here, but at the same time, I do so hate to think of the old man being in pain.
I mean, yeah, what's in me is telling me to put him out of his misery, but I mean, we don't know what he is now.
Maybe it's for the rest if we stay up here.
Another very loud roar echoes through the ship, and that thumping had been sort of random up until now. It becomes rhythmic, and you can feel it getting more intense. You surmise that it is drawing closer to you.
I suppose we get ready for whatever might be coming through that door.
I think you're right, mate. I don't think he's going down without a fight.
I draw my thin rank cutlass and my ornate flintlock.
Bruce, are you also staying up on deck during this?
Yeah, I think Bruce is around for... Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, Bruce is up on deck. I think Bruce wandered off by himself during some of the merriment to do his own things. But I think post-hearing the sounds of terrifying, potentially, things happening below deck has come back with the group.
Cool. The three of you stand resolute with your weapons drawn, your eyes locked on the door to the crew's quarters. Those dull thuds get closer and closer and closer until finally something slams against the door to the crew's quarters. The door itself bulges out from the frame with a sick cracking noise. There are a few seconds of silence, then another slam as the door bulges and the doorframe cracks slightly more. There's a third slam, but this one isn't a singular hit. It is a contiguous pressure, something leaning against the door from the other side. The door bulges out until you are amazed that the doorframe holds, and then finally it shatters. The splinters of the door clatter onto the deck of the ship, and something lurches out from the hallway. It is a bipedal, roughly 7 foot tall creature made of ooze.
Yeah, I knew it.
Its skin is the texture of a burnt marshmallow, but the cracks show a deep red. It's humanoid in the sense that it has arms and legs, but not in the sense that it has any recognizable head or facial features. It basically is a large blob with four blobby appendages, but that seems to be enough for it to walk towards you.
Juliet?
Juliet looks at you and at it and says, oh, so when you said disintegration, I didn't really...
I didn't realize it either. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
Not personally, no.
Did he ever tell you anything about anything like this?
We'd heard that someone on the ship was ill before, but I didn't understand that this is not really what comes to my mind when I hear ill.
Yeah. I kind of raise my pistol. Old boy, are you doing okay in there?
The creature roars in response.
Well, I don't know how to interpret that.
Pip says, well, I do. And she takes out her bardiche. I think that's how you pronounce it.
It is.
It is. Okay, great. And she sort of taps it against the hull of the ship and says, oh, I think we're going to have to do a little dance, us and the captain.
Wonderful. I believe the creature that was the captain agrees wholeheartedly. So if you would like to roll for initiative, okay. So that'll be 3d20 and probably
finish. All right.
This is probably also a good time for me to explain a general fact about Tavern Tales. You might have heard me just say that they will be rolling 3d20 plus finesse. All rolls in Tavern Tales are 3d20, but you don't add them together. Instead, you take the middle one, and that is your roll. The reason for that is that if you take the middle of 3d20, then our rolls are on a bell curve instead of like a flat line. So it's likely that you will do okay at something, and unlikely that you will do either amazing or terrible. Anyway, whichever die you use, you add one of your four stats to it, which are finesse, brawn, mind, and spirit. Those stats are really broad and kind of vague, and that's intentional. Tavern Tales encourages you to change the way you roleplay an action so that you can use your best stat as often as possible. For example, if you're trying to stab someone but your highest stat is mind, you could maybe describe the way your character like studies their fighting style and then attacks during a weakness. Anyway, once you roll your die and add your stat to it, we compare it to this table that tells us if your result is very bad, bad, mixed, good, or very good. And then I, the GM, will narrate some results.
12?
Yeah, Bruce got a 7.
Cool. In a stirring turn of events, my first two rolls of this campaign were a natural 1 for the captain and a 2 for Juliet. So maybe that bodes really well for y'all.
As we're doing this, I ask Juliet, do you have control over every aspect of the ship?
Not incredible control, but I have something. What would you like me to do?
Maybe we should tie him up.
Okay. I can certainly try. Okay, so Alex, you are up first.
Juliet, maybe you should try and truss him up now.
Oh, I see. You are using... I did not understand that that was your initial action.
No, I was explaining that to her, but now I'm actually doing it.
Cool. Can you tell us what it is you are actually doing via your trait?
So my combat trait is called Give Orders. On my turn, I can, as a quick action, give over any amount of my turn to someone else to do something as long as it is what I ordered them to do. They can either do it or not do it. It does mean that I can make you guys attack extra times if you want.
Oh, that's sick.
Nice.
Juliet swallows really hard and steps forward and says, okay, let's give this a shot. And I will roll for her. And that is a cool 5. So I guess we'll see how this goes.
Yikes.
You can see her sort of look up at the ropes above her and the rigging. And she sort of guides one with her hands. And you can see it slowly start to move. And she can pull it down from up towards like the crow's nest area down to where the captain is. And she gets it wrapped around as the creature is pretty much stationary. She gets it wrapped around one of the creature's limbs. And you can see the rope start to tighten and tighten as she tries to sort of like hold the creature steady. The creature seems to notice this and find it uncomfortable, and it pulls its arm forward, and most of its arm comes with it. The sort of like top, like burnt marshmallow layer just sloughs off as the creature pulls its arm away from this rope, and it now has one arm that is sort of just like exposed red ooze that is pouring out onto the deck. Okay, Gwen, what do you do?
I do not want that red stuff on me. But
luckily you've got a very long pole arm.
Yeah. Go figure, my combat trait is rend, which my attacks inflict bleed. So, all right. I'm going to try and maybe incapacitate it somehow. I'm going to do that by maybe stabbing my bardiche into where its foot would be. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and roll for it. So that's probably 3d20 plus, I would guess, either brawn or finesse.
Nice. All right. Oh, shit. Nice. A 13. 13 plus, I'm going to say it's brawn because that's my best one. Plus 3, so 16.
Awesome. Okay, so that is a pretty good roll. I think you step forward and you shove the bardiche into this thing's foot as it is slowly creeping its way towards all of you. The bardiche slides really easily into that, like way more easily than you were expecting. It kind of feels like you're cutting through nothing, and you sever its foot entirely.
Oh no, we shouldn't have died. We shouldn't have fought it.
Yeah.
Oh.
As you do that, it continues to step forward, and there's just sort of no foot anymore. So it trips, sort of, and doesn't quite fall, but it's stumbling forward through the ship. So yeah, excellent work. Would you also like to roll damage?
All right.
So that is, for your weapon, I believe, a d8 plus your brawn.
Nice. Okay, that is a 4 plus 3, 7 points of damage.
Awesome. And because your roll is relatively high, there's also a somewhat strange thing that happens as you pull the bardiche back from this now severed foot. There's kind of a splash of that ooze. None of it hits you, but a drop of it, a couple drops of it, hit that severed werewolf head.
Uh-oh.
Now, a minute ago, that werewolf head was sort of poorly preserved and rotting. It is less rotted now. The ooze soaks into it, and it seems to undo some of the wounds, rot, etc. on that severed werewolf head.
Hmm. Pip says, don't like that.
Oh my god. Wait. Am I allowed to ask informational questions on other people's combat rounds?
I do not believe you can talk until your turn. Actually, never mind. This is a podcast. You can talk on other people's turns.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
And that would bring us to Bruce's turn.
Okay, so Pip got the former artist formerly known as the captain on the ground, yeah.
Not entirely. It is very much unstable, and it is stumbling forward, but it is still kind of upright.
Cool. So Bruce comes over with his big old walking stick, and is just going to take a big wallop at the captain's head.
Great. Go ahead and roll for it. So 3d20 plus whatever stat you think is relevant. Probably brawn, but...
Okay. I'm going to make the argument that it's not brawn, because that's -1.
Okay. What is your argument?
I would like to argue that it would be finesse, because Bruce is going to be like doing some navigating around people and trying to aim himself just right with this hit. To try to make sure the blood isn't splattering on people, but away. And so I think there's a lot of like fine movements happening and calculations he's taking into consideration before he wallops.
Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense to me. So go ahead and roll a 3d20 plus finesse.
Okay. Thank you, GM. Great. Well, that's okay.
So you rolled what, Abby?
Nothing good. I rolled a 7.
Oh boy.
Yeah. General apologies to the team for whatever the bad thing that happens is.
Yeah. Okay. So that is a straight up bad roll. I think you're still going to deal damage. So go ahead and roll that. That is a D8 plus the stat you attacked with.
Wait, can I just say that I may have gotten a 5 as the median roll for that D20 roll, but I got an 8 on a D8 for damage.
Cool. 8.
Guys, I'm very proud of myself. Like, the only good roll.
Okay, yeah, so you do deal a considerable amount of damage. Here's what I think happens. You are fairly short, and this thing is pretty tall, and it sort of leaned over, hunched forward as it stumbles across the ship. You're trying to get like the optimal trajectory for a wallop that knocks it in a different direction, like away from you and your friends. And to do so, you kind of have to swing overhand. What that winds up doing is that this thing is lurching over you. You jump in the air and sort of swing over your head to try to hit it in its head-like region. And what you do is tear this enormous gash through that sort of burnt marshmallow skin. And that red ooze just pours out of that gash onto you, onto the deck, onto everything. The creature, as it sort of stumbles forward on its non-foot into the pool of its own ooze, slips and continues moving and kind of passes you by and hits the sort of railing of the ship. And there's this cracking sound as the railing itself cracks and the creature sort of slumps against it and seems to be sort of incapacitated, but still, like, moving. It's not completely gone.
I quickly put my pistol away. How do you feel? How do you feel?
I don't...
Pretty good. The ooze is oddly comforting.
I feel great. What's wrong?
Oh my god, I know what's happening. I know what's happening. Can I ask you a question, Colton?
Yes.
Is the ooze the same color as what shattered out of the health potion earlier?
Yes.
Oh.
Is the ship of a ship's bell?
Yeah, I think so.
I ring the ship's bell as loud as I can.
Okay. There are only two-story buildings in Thornpaw that you can really see, and lights come on in a few of the windows of those. Nothing really seems to happen. A few people, like, walk outside and look at you and then, like, turn around and walk back inside. But after, like, a few minutes, I think Countess Abelard shows up, and you can see that she is sort of, like, actively putting on her incredibly ornate ceremonial armor. Like, it's not entirely on yet as she gets to the dock.
Countess.
Yes.
Well, actually, as she's counting, I quickly ask everybody, I have to ask the Countess if she knows what's happening. I think that he's making the potions out of these people. He's infecting them and they're making the potions because he doesn't know how to do it another way. I have to ask the Countess if she knows anything about this.
Right, do that!
Countess!
She approaches the dock and says, yes, is there something I can do for you?
I'm so sorry to wake you, but you have to arrest the physician at once.
Why?
The blood of the creatures. It's the same as the healing potions. It fixed that wolf head and it healed our friend here.
Okay, I do want to throw out that the thing is still... there, right? Like, it's still on the deck. It's not dead.
What?
I mean, it's like 99% dead, but it's not dead.
Oh, you said it fell, so I thought it died. Is it like...
It is not, like, mobile, but it's just sort of there.
Oh.
So if you want to do anything with that,
I'm not going to.
Okay, cool.
I'm not, at least. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing right now. If it's not, like, actively able to hurt anybody right now...
Huh. Well, that's troubling.
Wait, okay, hold on. I just so everyone knows, I want to make this very clear from the beginning. I was aware of the fact that it was completely plausible that the Countess is in on this plan. I was completely aware of that. I just still had to make it clear to her as soon as possible, no matter what.
No, that's fair.
I think she sort of like unsheaths her sword, but she holds it like sort of out at her side. I think she's sort of trying to indicate to you, like, I'm not about to hit you with this sword.
Yeah.
And then she... I think the gangplank is up, so she looks up at you and says, can one of you descend the thing that lets me walk onto the ship?
Yes, I do it, because I know how to do that.
And she slowly walks up it. It, like, nearly crumbles under the enormous weight of her fucking giant armor. And she makes her way onto the ship and sort of dips one of her fingers into the various puddles of ooze on the ship. And then she sort of rubs it into, like, there's not really much exposed skin, so I think she, like, rubs it into her face and feels that it's sort of, like... absorbs and feels fairly pleasant. And she looks down at it and says, well, fuck. Yeah, you're right. Your name is Pip, correct?
Lady Rory Olivia Pippendower, that's me, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware. You killed a werewolf earlier, correct?
I did, yes.
Would you like to assist me in arresting this physician?
A light goes off in Pip's head and she, brandishes her bardiche and says, I'd love to do some justice.
Wonderful. The Countess leads Pip off the ship and then I think turns around once she sort of has made it to the dock and says, by the way, I assume that the rest of you are perfectly healthy in this case, so feel free to leave or follow me. Whatever you want to do.
I go with her because I have to be there for this.
Great. And Abby?
I follow because they're my pals.
Wonderful. Abelard leads you down the long dock and into town proper. It's just after midnight, but the clanging of the ship's bell probably woke up quite a few people, so there are still a few people milling about and staring at you from a safe distance.
I just realized we left one of those monsters alive on the boat. It's okay, we'll deal with that after.
We'll turn back around, I guess.
You're headed down the dirt road towards the physician's office when his door opens and he sprints out of it with a bunch of vials in his hand. He runs across the street and throws them onto a random bystander who becomes absolutely soaked in that clear liquid, which quickly turns dark red.
Countess?
Yes?
I think he's caught wind of the fact that we've caught wind of him.
Yeah, I think the bell may have... We should probably do something about that. That bystander, who, by the way, is the town carpenter, so that sucks, she mutates into ooze way more quickly than the captain did, maybe because there was, like, a larger dose of that clear stuff. She basically explodes into one of those burnt marshmallow creatures and reels backwards and cracks the doorframe of her house.
I shoot it.
Great. Go ahead and roll to do that.
And then as I do it, I say, I'm still worried these things might be just their normal guys, but I have to shoot it. That is a... I'm taking like a crack shot, so I'm going to say assume finesse.
Sounds good.
Which is still going to make this 5 really embarrassing.
Yes, you have very limited time to make this shot, so you just sort of pull the gun off your hip, aim it at this thing as quickly as possible, and fire. The bullet goes a little bit wide, it doesn't really hit the thing, it just sort of grazes that burnt marshmallow skin, and as it does, that red ooze just sort of splatters on the building behind it. Because these things don't really have, like, heads, it's pretty difficult to tell which way they're facing. After you shoot it, it becomes apparent that it was facing away from you, because now it turns around to face you and charges headlong at you and Countess Abelard. The Countess says, wonderful work, I'm so glad to have you aboard. And unsheathes her sword and sort of stands at the ready.
I must apologize, Countess, it has been quite a while. And then I draw my sword as well.
Great. Do y'all...
Is the physician running? Was it going after the physician? Is he running?
The physician seems to have disappeared back into his office.
Which is in the now collapsed building?
No, so there's like his office, a small like dirt road, and then another building. The thing seems to have sort of like collapsed part of that building. Like it ran through a wall and the building is collapsing.
I've got to go after that physician.
Okay, let's just keep your old initiative order. There's no reason to re-roll this. So I'll just roll the sticker somewhere in here. Cool. She gets a 9, so that's perfect. It is her turn now. I think she will move forward to attack the beast, since that's sort of a pressing issue, since it is charging at her. So she takes this massive broadsword in both hands and swings at the creature as it approaches. And she gets a nat 20, which is kind of wild.
Wait, does that mean you rolled 2 nat 20s?
It does. Yep.
All right.
She waits and waits and waits until this thing is within slashing distance and then drags this sword across its midsection. It is a full-on anime fight scene where this thing just stops in place and then the top half of it just falls off. The creature just collapses into a puddle, and the follow-through of her swing just splatters ooze everywhere.
Plants grow?
Plants do not grow. she says, all right, someone chase down the physician.
Are we out of combat now?
I think at least from the physician's perspective, you're still in combat, so let's keep going with that, which I think makes it Gwen's turn.
All right, nice. I'm gonna chase after the physician with my bardiche out, so it'll reach him before I do.
Wonderful. So you're gonna just sort of like run into the building he is in?
Yes.
Rad. Yeah, you kick open the door to the doctor's office. It seems like he shoved like a cabinet or something in front of it to try to bar your entry, but you just knock that straight down because you are very strong. It's full of those potions and a bunch of them crash on the ground and shatter, but you have no trouble finding him because he's basically just cowering in the corner. At this point, I think it's safe to say you have full control of the situation, but how exactly is Pip going to apprehend him?
I'm gonna have my bardiche catch him in the leg, and then I'm gonna throw the rest of my weight on him.
Okay, sounds good. So you are, to be clear, stabbing him in the leg and then just sort of tackling him?
Yeah.
I think she's murdering him, isn't it?
Murder's a strong word. She's taking him down like she would her prized prey.
Okay, go ahead and roll for it.
All right. 11, I'm gonna say that's a bronze, so 14.
Great. That is a solid good. I think you have no trouble doing it. He is a small Dr. Lee man.
Is he still wearing the full suit, or has he dropped that shenanigan?
Yeah, he's definitely still wearing the full suit, but I think maybe as Pip tackles him, she kind of cracks the nose of the mask, and it sort of sits askew on his face. At this point, I think he is totally and completely immobilized and subdued. Countess Abelard follows you into the building. She kind of has to shove aside that cabinet that you knocked over. She looks at all the shattered potions on the ground, and she grinds some of the glass under the heel of her armor and says, I really hope no one needs these, because I don't super feel comfortable distributing them at this point.
Are we all in the room now?
Do you want to be?
Yes.
Great, then yes.
Countess.
Yes?
If I may, I think we should see what he looks like. I think we should see what he looks like under the mask.
Scooby-Doo this.
Oh, God. It is truly an actual Scooby-Doo moment. Let's see. We remove your mask, sir.
He does not. The Countess just sort of, like, takes it off him.
It was all Jenkins.
He is no one you recognize because all established characters are accounted for.
Is this the physician?
She does not seem shocked by this. He's just, like, a weird, scrawny dude.
Human?
Appears to be human, yeah.
Are you even a physician?
Well, yes, I am a real physician. It's just that things are not immensely profitable unless there's a panic for a disease that might drive interest in health potions, which it turns out are expensive to produce.
How do you choose the people that you turn into monsters?
Well, I didn't want anyone that someone might investigate, so people who are perhaps new arrivals without many connections seemed like a perfect revenue stream.
Are their brains still theirs?
Oh, certainly not. No, they're completely decomposed.
Pip is going to put a lot of weight on his windpipe from behind.
I say to the Countess, I'm sorry, I have to go do something. And then I go back to the ship to murder the captain.
Great. Yeah, mission accomplished, I think. That seems like it's incredibly easy. You walk over to the ship, you do that, and you come back. And the Countess says to all of you, I am incredibly sorry. I recognize that to any outside party, it will seem like this is an incredible lapse in judgment on my part, and perhaps it is. You have to understand that I am in charge of this place with essentially no outside involvement, so with an illness in town, relying on the physician seemed like a reasonable move.
Countess.
Yes?
For 5 years, he has served you well, correct?
Yes.
And it is only recently that this has begun to occur. I think that you can be completely forgiven of any question of a lapse of judgment.
Well, thank you. It seems to me that a great many more people would probably have died were you not to have discovered this. So I certainly owe you. As I said, Pip, if you ever want some form of work, I'm sure there's something we can find for you to do. And I'm in debt to all of you. You're welcome to exit quarantine. If you'd like to stay somewhere in town, I'm sure I can cover the cost for at least a while. I certainly owe you at least that much.
Well, I think that's amenable. Don't suppose you want me to get rid of this nasty little wretch?
If you mean murder him, no. Technically, I can, but I think for some semblance of...
You have a license to kill! What was that all about?
I literally do. I could murder him at this exact moment, but I think it's best for me to arrest him and send him back. I probably would kill him if we had more than a few days until the next boat, but since there's one here and I can just sort of handcuff him and throw him on it, that seems easy enough to me.
It's about justice, Pip.
Yeah, but think about this. You give me a license to kill, and I'll do it.
She kind of laughs and says, I'm going to arrest him and send him back to Cole. But if you're interested in this sort of all-encompassing license, maybe we can work something out. Abelard ties the physician's hands, hauls him to his feet, and leads him away into town. The townsfolk watch her go, then slowly retreat into their homes. Odd and upsetting things are typical in Thornpaw. The three of you stand in the dimly lit street and try to decide what to do next.
I say as he goes, any person who kills his own people is not a person.
Hey y'all, what's up? I realized there was some additional info you needed to know right around here, so I figured it was a good time for a mid-episode break. That additional info is that Abby, Alex, and Gwen all have physical props that I mailed to them, including a map of the island, a little booklet with some lore about the campaign world, and tickets for the boat trip they took to get here, all of which contain some cool information and hopefully look kinda nice. If any of that information ever comes up in the show, we'll be sure to recap it for you, the listeners, so you don't need the props, but if you would like a PDF copy, it is super easy to get one. All you need to do is help us spread the word about the show, whether that's via a tweet, or a Tumblr, or a Reddit post, or just like you shouting into the void, and then after you do that, email us at thevoyageforevermore@gmail.com or DM us at forevermorepod, saying that you did that. It would be really cool if you included like a link or a screenshot or something, but if you don't want to do that, we can just kind of like honor system it, just please don't lie. Speaking of me summarizing that information for you, the listener, the back of their boat tickets say, this ticket also entitles the bearer to one of the following. One night stay at the Tangled Web with purchase of house special, or free drinks at Grimble's Grotto if you buy a room. That is why in the next scene, everyone will already know the names of the two inns in this town. Also, I want to let you know that the music in this week's episode is from the album Just Relax by Purple Cat. That's purple with two R's like a cat purring. I emphasize that because I forget literally every time, and then when I search it with one R and nothing comes up on my computer, I briefly worry that I have slipped into a parallel dimension. We only use two songs in this episode, Road Trip and Quiet Night, but the entire album is amazing and comes highly recommended. You can find Purple Cat on Bandcamp. And speaking of music, I also want to let you know about a really cool show called Geekcore Radio, which you should definitely be listening to if you like music, podcasts, or geeky things. So if you are listening to me talk right now, you are definitively in the target market. They explain and play music about a wide variety of subjects, from video games to alien food fights and everything in between. I also understand they're playing the Proto Men on an upcoming episode, which is super rad. I've listened to their first album like more than a dozen times straight through. Anyway, you can find Geekcore Radio at www.geekcoreradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. Normally at this point, I would also tell you when our next episode goes up, but it is already up, which is super exciting, so go listen to it when you finish this. But thanks so much, y'all.
I'm going to go check out the Tangled Web, if anyone wants to come with me.
Well, free drinks always sounds good to me, but...
I'm likely to peruse both of these establishments before going to bed, because I'm an old man and I've grown quite particular in my age.
I think that can be easily arranged. I mean, how big is this island anyway? We can just walk to one and walk to the other.
I think it's quite big.
Hell!
I think it's quite big.
The continent that you are on is... enormous. The town is very small. There are two-story buildings. You pass both of them, and the only buildings two stories are the Tangled Web and Grimble's Grotto.
Are they adjacent to one another?
They're not, like, adjacent, but, like, essentially everything in this town is visible from everywhere in this town.
Are they owned by the same person? I'm gonna find out.
Okay. So you're headed to the Tangled Web.
I am, right?
And I follow.
Yeah, I'll go.
Alright, cool. The Tangled Web is an easy building to find. Not only is it far and away the biggest building in town, it also sits facing the water at the town's dead center. There's a sign out front, swaying gently in the sea breeze, that proclaims the name of the establishment in beautiful and meticulous hand lettering. The three of you push through ornately carved double doors into a room that is spacious, beautiful, and way nicer than anything you expected to find in this town.
Hmm.
Pretty much everything is carved dark wood, deep red fabric, or some combination thereof. It's a little after midnight, so the place is sparsely populated. A few people have drinks, but most seem to be oddly happy just sitting and staring into space. There's only one visible employee around, and he's of a species I don't think you've encountered yet. As far as you can tell, he's some sort of anthropomorphic spider. He has four deep red eyes that lock on you as you walk through the doors. He cocks his head to the side and says,
"Well, hello, hello. It's strange, I thought the Countess meant to keep you locked up all evening. You've been let out early?"
Ah, yes, things have gone okay for us this night. Well, as lucky as we could have asked, we are clear of any problem, and in fact, I think that no one will be showing up with this illness ever again.
Oh, well, that's delightful to hear. It's always so nice to have new faces in town.
Does this sound sincere?
What he's saying right now?
Yeah.
It's kind of up to you. You could, like, roll to find out, but I think it essentially sounds, like, as sincere as it sounds to you.
Okay, I'm gonna roll to find out how sincere is it. That's a 5. Okay, I guess I just fully buy it.
Yeah.
my good friend, what is the house special?
Oh, I'm something called a spider kind. I'm not sure if you've met my kind before.
I have not, question mark? Or have I?
You probably have not.
I am an old man. Okay.
I think it's, unless you've been to, like, this island, probably not.
Okay.
Wait, are you frog old or, like, person old?
I am like, in my late 60s.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Sorry, continue.
It is unclear how long we
That's
live.
True.
he says, I'm a spider kind. I'm not sure if you've met my kind before, but I can inject particular blends of venom. In practice, that means I can simulate most any sensation. It's essentially non-addictive.
Out of character, this is another Tavern Tales trait. What Vren's house special is his ability to use the occultism trait Blissful Agony, which reads, describe how you inflict physical sensations. Force a creature you are touching to experience any physical sensation you want. This doesn't deal damage. So in Vryn's case, all spider kind are able to inject venom, which gives them the ability to use blissful agony. And he has chosen to use that as essentially like a drug that he sells at his bar.
Hmm. How do you approximate things you've never experienced? I'm genuinely asking.
It's a chemical cocktail more akin to alcohol or a hallucinogenic substance than it is to a psychic assault.
Are these sensations influenced at all by our own memories?
They certainly can be. The particular things you've experienced in your life may impact how a sensation hits you. The particular things it conjures in your mind.
Hmm.
If you are interested in memories, I should mention another service I offer. I'm something of a collector of interesting and unique experiences.
Hmm.
If you have any such experiences, I can experience them through you via the bite. And I pay handsomely for memories that I find fascinating.
Do we keep them?
Oh, of course. I don't take the things I see. I only experience them with you, through you, as you.
Do you feel a kinship with people you do this with, or is it perfunctory for you? I'm sorry, that was quite a forward question. Very rude of me. I apologize.
No, I don't mind at all. It's always nice to get to know new people. I'm Vryn, by the way. It seems maybe we should at least establish our
Hello,
names.
Hello, Vryn. Fizzwig. Blah, blah, blah.
Fizzwig.
I'm Pip.
I'm Bruce.
That's Bruce.
Lovely. Yes, I suppose I do feel some sort of kinship. There's a closeness to it, an intimacy, both emotionally and physically. Of course, some of it is somewhat perfunctory. Almost all of my kind has the same ability. They just choose not to use it.
Is there a moral reason for that? Or are you just special and, like, have that power?
I think they find it uninteresting.
Uninteresting? I thought perhaps intimate, but never uninteresting.
Present company accepted, spider kind are not known for being nosy. And of course it is deeply intimate. There is direct fang-to-neck contact.
Pip kind of blushes at that.
Hmm. I'm going to go take in some of the night air, but I'm sure I'll be back to talk with you soon, my friend. Vryn, you said?
Vryn, yes. Wonderful to meet you all. I'm sure I'll see you again. The town is fairly small.
Not everyone has to come with me. I'm just also going to go check out Grimble's Grotto. I didn't want to be rude about it.
No, I was very... Yeah, I give him a wink and I say, I'll maybe take you up on that later. The memory, not the other thing.
He winks back.
What other thing?
The sensation thing that he can do. He winks at you and he has like four eyes that are visible to you. So it's like kind of a like rolling wink between the two eyes on one side of his face.
Oh,
very cool.
So good.
So you are you all headed to Grimble's Grotto?
Yeah, sure.
I certainly am.
Yep.
Wonderful. As you sort of like walk up to this building, again, there are like two-story buildings in town, so it's not exactly difficult to find. You walk up and open the door, and we've all experienced the thing where you like walk into a room and it is clear that a conversation has just been stopped due to you entering.
Yes. Oh, so this place is this place, would you describe it as seedy?
Not really. It is just very small. Like,
okay.
There is a dwarf standing behind the bar and two people at the bar, and the three of you entering pretty much like fills the space.
Are any of them obviously sailors? I'm sorry, can you keep going?
None of them strike you as sailors immediately. You are overwhelmed with a strong scent of like lime juice, like literal limes, the fruit, which you, Admiral, as a sailor would probably know is like a sailor thing.
Hmm.
Who among them is, besides like, I guess the bartender, is not immediately clear.
What are they?
The bartender is a dwarf. There are two people sitting at the bar, one of whom is in some kind of like cloak and looks to be like human-ish or elf-ish height, somewhere in that range. And then sitting on a bar stool beside that person is a wood elf.
Ah, yes.
Like 3.5-ish feet tall.
Wait, a wood elf by itself?
Alex is referencing some of that lore booklet info here. In this world, wood elves are a species similar to, but legally distinct from, Keebler elves, and they almost always live in a sort of hive-like social structure in a tree centered around a mayor, who's kind of like a queen bee. Anyway, this wood elf is indeed alone.
I'm so very sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt any conversation. We could step back out and return in a few moments.
Oh, no, it's all right. Y'all come right on in, take a seat. Can I get you a drink or a room or some such? I'm Grimble, by the way. I own the place.
I figured you might be Grimble. I shake Grimble's hand if Grimble will allow me to shake.
Yeah, definitely. And he kind of gestures and says, now I am absolutely serious. Y'all come in and sit down. I figure nobody's going to come by Grimble's Grotto past midnight who doesn't want a drink or a room or something.
Can I ask, What kind of drinks are your specialties?
Well, I'll be real honest with you. I don't deal too much in complex flavor profiles, sure. So there's essentially three things on the menu. The first one is straight liquor, the second one is various citrus juices, and the third one is those first two things mixed together.
To prevent... And then, of course, I don't have teeth, but it's a whole thing.
Right, yeah.
Alex, does he say that he doesn't have teeth out loud?
No, he does not say that he does not have teeth out loud. Oh, okay. He mentions scurvy, which I just realized in the moment that I was going to describe doing something that I could not describe because a lot of toads are toothless.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly confident Fizzwig is toothless. And by that, I mean... Fizzwig is toothless. This is a clean drop of me saying Fizzwig is toothless.
At the mention of scurvy, Pip sort of gives him a long look and then like tries to like subtly but not really try and see if he actually doesn't have teeth.
I have a big horrible soft tissue mouth. So
exactly.
Incredible.
He, I think Grimble probably does notice that you do this and says,
Well, I'll tell you this, it's a more serious issue than people give it credit for. You get out there, it ain't the shipwrecks and sea monsters that kill you, it's the little things you tend to forget.
Yes, of course. I've seen it many times. I'm still a little energetic at this present moment. I might step back out into the cold for a few moments, but I'm sure you will likely... Is it cold? It's hot out.
Yeah, it's
step out into the air. Warm, step out into the air, then. Not
there's
the
a nice sea breeze.
I'll step out into the breeze. You know, even in my advanced age, I still always take great calm at the breeze off the sea. And also, I would love for you to be able to finish your conversation. I feel still very much as if I have done something quite rude by barging in here, even though I could not have known, of course.
The wood elf who has been silent up until this point.
Have I ever met wood elves before? It is common to meet wood elves.
Yeah, you've probably like met one before. Probably, as you said, it is atypical to see a wood elf alone. Typically, they congregate in large groups.
Yeah.
But this one is alone. She's, again, about 3.5 feet tall and has short blonde hair. She looks up at all of you and says, it's totally fine if you want to stay. We were talking, but it's not really private.
Well, I still need a bit of a breeze, but you've definitely assuaged my feelings of guilt, and you've spared this old man some embarrassment, so I probably will. I will likely come back soon. I must go outside for a moment.
All right, so you head outside. Pip and Bruce, what do you do?
Grimble, if it's not too much of a burden on you, can I bother you for a nightcap?
Oh, you know I am always happy to pour a drink.
I do intend to buy a room, so I'm hoping this nightcap might be free.
Oh, certainly. That's fantastic. Straight liquor all right with you?
Straight is fantastic, and doubled is even better.
I can certainly do that.
He pours, he doesn't really ask you, like, what you want specifically. It seems that he may only stock one actual beverage, which he, pours into a glass considerably more full than double would be, and just sort of shoves it towards you.
Fantastic.
Now, y'all are them new arrivals here with the boat?
Yes.
Well, I'm sure you already know this, you wouldn't buy your tickets otherwise, but it's a bit of a strange town. There ain't many people here who could be anywhere else, for better or for worse. Speaking of which, what brings you all here?
Oh, journeying. Yeah, but your town is quite fascinating.
It's a
what we've already arrested your physician. We've been here for 10 minutes.
Well, that's certainly interesting. Hopefully that doesn't come back to bite us in the ass.
Well, I think as long as you keep this good liquor on hand, you should be just fine. And I like Great Gatsby tip my very hefty glass of liquor in his direction and take it all in.
Old sport.
Yeah, old sport. Throw my t-shirts around the Grand Library.
Beautiful. Pip, are you still chilling here as well?
Yeah, I feel like she's sort of taking it all in. And then she is watching Bruce pretty closely. Her eyes are doing that silly time cat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she pretty impulsively turns to Grimble and says, "I'll have what she's having. He's having. Excuse me."
Yeah, Grimble pours another glass and pushes it towards you and says, So, are you planning to stay here for the night as well?
Sure. Yeah. I like it here. I like this vibe that's going on. Very, very swarthy, very, very dark side. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Wonderful. I ask because I only got two rooms, so got to know when they're filled up.
I'm gonna have to share the bed.
steamy.
Pip sort of shrugs her shoulders and goes, "All right, well, I sleep on a floor. I've roughed it before."
Oh, no, now the room's filled right now. These two are just Couple of old friends stopping by for a couple of drinks. As long as your froggy friend don't want to stay here, I got more than enough room for both of you.
And Pip looks at Fizzigwig and says...
I think Fizzigwig is outside at the moment.
I am outside. I am actually at the water taking in the sea breeze.
Oh, I see. So never mind. I don't even...
That was not a euphemism.
Pip sort of shrugs and says, well, if not here, we'll just meet up with him later. I don't think he sleeps. He mentioned something about that. So I guess... doesn't need a room.
I want to clarify, I definitely do sleep.
Amazing.
You've probably seen me sleep.
I like the fiction that Pip is convinced that you do like a D&D elf thing and just like meditate at night.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, yeah. I'm definitely accepting it as true. I mean, I do. Oh, never mind. That's a spoiler for my traits.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like the idea that Pip is 100% convinced that you don't
have absolutely.
Do y'all want to do anything more here, or are you just going to sort of like quietly and awkwardly consume beverages?
I think Pip is going to keep drinking, and every single time she takes a sip, she goes, "Ooh!" but keep doing it. And then...
Is this Pip's first time drinking?
Maybe. she's trying to make friends with the mysterious... mysterious buddy.
Bruce?
Mm-hmm.
The wood elf looks up at you after like the third time that you make a visceral reaction to consuming alcohol and says, I think if you want something that's a little less intense, he might be able to just give you the juice on its own.
Pip looks very tempted by that and then sort of glances back over at Bruce and sees how he's enjoying his beverage, and she goes, no, I'm having a great time, and then takes a big old sip and then goes, ooh.
The wood elf like reaches into a little bag on her hip and pulls something out that's like wrapped in some kind of like leaf and pushes it to you and says, here, it might be a good change of pace. And inside is what appears to be like 4 shortbread cookies that she has baked at some point.
Oh, it's so sweet.
Aww. Pip lights up at this and goes, oh, you didn't have to give me your cookies.
Oh, it's totally fine. I'm Florin, by the way.
I'm Pip. Nice to meet you. And she holds out a hand for a vigorous shake.
Yeah, she shakes your hand. Her hand is like 1/3 the size of yours, optimistically.
Yeah.
And after she sort of finishes, she like scooches her stool slightly closer to the other person and says, it's great to meet new people. The town's getting bigger really quickly lately. I guess not really quickly, just more quickly than it used to.
Oh, is, I mean, I guess, you know, it's times are changing, but really quickly, huh? I wouldn't expect it.
Well, I'm 145 years old, so the past 100 years were a lot faster than the first couple.
that would certainly be definitely a change, I think, after... couple of years of silence and then all this. How long have you been on the island? Were you born here or what happened?
Was it 100 years of solitude? Gabriel Garcia Marquez?
Yeah, I was born here. Yeah, there's a bunch of wood elves further inland. I'm sure you'll meet some if you head that way.
Oh, wood elves, eh? Are they, I guess... native to the island, or they come here?
Oh, yeah, we're all over. All it really takes is a couple, and before you know it, we're everywhere.
Like rabbits.
Yeah.
Is that offensive to say?
Yeah, of course it is. I'm not even there.
Oh my god.
Pip is doesn't have a firm grasp on the outside world.
the person in the cloak puts a hand on Florin's shoulder. You assume it's a hand. They actually stay completely under the fabric, so you don't exactly know. Florin notices and puts her hand on their hand for a second and looks up and then says, we'll probably be leaving in just 1 minute, but it was really nice to meet you. And your name was what? And she speaks to you, Bruce.
My name is Bruce. Nice to meet you.
Wonderful. What was your question, Alex?
Can we see a face on the cloaked figure? I mean, like, I'm not there anymore, but for scene setting purposes.
Whoever it is essentially, like, you cannot see a face, and that is not, like, convenient shadows. That is, like, they are essentially facing directly towards a wall, like very pointedly looking away from you. Florin makes her way down from the bar stool, which is kind of an ordeal for her because the stool is taller than she is. Once she's down, the person in the cloak stands up and immediately nearly collapses. Florin runs under them to sort of catch them and hold them up, and then using Florin as a crutch, they kind of make their way out of the bar. And presumably that draws your attention, and at that point, Grimble kind of sets a glass down pretty heavily on the counter and says, So, where did y'all say you were from?
Pip opens her mouth to speak and then looks very pointedly at Bruce, very interested in what he has to say.
This is when having done more backstory would be really useful.
Bruce
would say, hither and yon, to carry on the angsty, mysterious vibe.
Yeah, and Pip sort of nods sagely and repeats, hither and yon. Overseas for me, yon.
Right. I mean, I assume overseas because that's where most everybody comes from.
Yeah. But... I mean, like, real, real far away from here.
I see.
Grimble, I am just so enthralled with this small talk that we're making. But if you don't mind, I do have a question for you.
Right.
Great. I'm wondering if you can tell me more about the forests and the landscape that surrounds Thornpaw.
Most everything around here is forest. Y'all got something you're looking for? I can just give you a...
Why don't you just start babbling and I'll interject when I feel the need.
Oh my god!
Right. Let's see what I remember. You head right out of Thornpaw into the tree line. Keep going for a couple of miles. You're going to find this big metal house. There's a lady who lives there who is incredibly mean. Keep going past her. Eventually you're going to hit a big city, but... takes a long time. You'll hit a couple of little towns and settlements in between, but they ain't much to write home about. There's a couple of old forts around. If you head straight out my door and keep walking out of town, you'll find a couple of them, but they ain't too interesting anymore. You head in the opposite direction. There's a little town about half a day's ride out, but be honest with you, it's got a bit of a culty vibe. I wouldn't really go there. If there's something specific you're looking for, I might be able to give you more information, but honestly, for the most part, I've just stayed in Thornpaw.
Sure would be nice to know any of this information, but I am completely out of the loop.
Are you still just sort of like chilling outside?
I secret information texted you what I was doing.
Hey y'all, post-production Colton here, filling you in on what it is that Alex texted me. As a frog person, Fizzwig Burblemon needs to completely submerge himself in water for a certain portion of every day, or consume an absurd amount of water to make up for the fact that he didn't do that. So while Pip and Bruce are hanging out in Grimble's Grotto, Fizzwig leaves, takes off his more ornate clothes, and wades into the ocean to reabsorb some moisture. Alex, I have received your secret information. Okay. Because none of you have stopped this, I think Florin and the other person have left the place. Alex, I think you see that from your vantage point, so if you would like to do anything about that, otherwise, feel free to continue your current actions.
How far away are they from me?
Not far, maybe like 50 yards.
I like, as respectful of the fact that people are sleeping as I can, while still like calling out to them, I say, have a good night, I hope to speak with you again at some future time.
Florin kind of like jumps as you say that, and looks around, and I think it takes her a while to like find you, and she says, you also have a really good night. We'll see you probably again. Good night. Bye.
Goodbye.
And she and the person in the cloak kind of like shuffle off towards someplace. I feel like we were in the middle of something. Oh, right. Bruce, you had just asked about things around Thornpaw, and he'd asked if you were looking for anything specific.
I suppose I'm specifically in the market for things that are bigger, things that are... giant.
I pop in as a small gremlin and I say, are you talking about giants?
Grimble says, I'm certainly no expert, but if you're interested in oversized critters, heading inland's gonna be your best bet.
Wonderful. You have been most informative and entertaining. Thank you for your time and your company.
Well, I didn't try too hard to be entertaining, so that's a mixed compliment, I figure.
I love this guy. This guy's my best friend.
Bruce nods and like lays the coin on the bar and nods to Pip and saunters. Do dwarves saunter?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, anyone can saunter.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. Saunters away.
Can I ask you a question though? Is he trying to be sexy? Like, is that a deliberately sexy saunter?
No, it's not sexy. No,
it's a secretive saunter.
It's definitely more of like a power play saunter.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like not seductive. It's just like, I own this room.
Less of a sachet, more of a, I guess, saunter, which you said at first, but I was wondering how much sachet was in there.
I appreciate you checking in the sachet to saunter ratios.
I think, Pip looks a little disappointed that she didn't get to bug her her BFF for...
Definitely BFF, honestly.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Pip fully intends to... Well, she was trying to be a BFF with the captain, but that didn't turn out so great.
Yeah, it was pretty upsetting.
But, she's sort of latching on to her companions and sort of wraps her claws on the table, not quite sure what to do now that her buddy is gone. Then a thought seems to occur to her, and she goes, so, like... You ever seen, like, a really big monster? Like, a big one?
Yeah, I think Grimble is cleaning a glass because he owns a bar, and that is what you are legally obligated to do in fiction. He kind of slows to a stop and then sets it down and looks at you and says,
well, I'd say I've seen more than my fair share of horrible monsters. You'd have to be a little bit more...
No, you be more specific. What are you talking about? Like, how big?
I've been all over this island, and there's quite a lot out there. That cult that's kind of out behind my shop, and then, I don't know.
Alleged cult.
A couple dozen miles.
Allegedly.
They're into some kind of big monster out there. There's some kind of thing that eats ground somewhere around here.
What?
Makes rivers. It's
what?
Real, real big, and it's real, real upsetting.
Oh my god!
and I had, I used to know some people who were... into all kinds of strange things. I've seen a lot of the weird and unusual.
So, like, it was a good decision I came here? Like, there's stuff to do?
If you're looking for things that are hellish and horrifying and deeply upsetting, you came to the correct island.
Perfect. I am so psyched. You just gave me the best information you could have possibly given me, aside from where they are and how I can kill them. Don't worry about that. I'll figure it out. I guess at that point she goes to take a coin out of her purse and slap it on the table and then sort of goes, but this, can I have like orange juice or something?
Incredible.
He laughs and says, anytime. And then he goes ahead and pours you that and hands it to you. At which point I think Alex re-arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. The door swings open as Pip is consuming orange juice. What do you do?
Hello, Grimble.
Hello.
I think that I would love one of those drinks you so have praised.
Yeah, Grimble says, what's your particular predilection?
I'm going to be honest with you. I think I want something straight liquor with some of the citrus. And if I may, could I also have a very, very large glass of water?
Wonderful. I can get you both of those. And he prepares both of those drinks and slides them onto the table.
I pay him.
Wonderful.
And I intermittently sip both drinks. And then after my first drink is done, I drink all of the water.
I suppose after you, since you're paying for the drinks, that means you are not staying here.
I would love to stay here.
Well, I only got two rooms. So if you want to split one,
I thought that
feel free. otherwise.
I realized I just acted on information I did not have.
Yep.
So let's assume I ask if he has room.
I'm all full, but the spider guy over there, he's got like 8 rooms, and they're all nicer than anywhere I've ever stayed.
8 rooms?
If you got the coin, I highly recommend it.
8 rooms?
Yeah, I don't quite understand it, because there ain't really that many people in this town. But
do they have 8 limbs?
You're suggesting there's some kind of comment.
No, I know spiders do. I'm asking
spider kind. They have like you know how Squidward has 8 tentacles, but they form 4 limbs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that.
Okay, cool.
So you're suggesting there's some kind of commonality between the fact that he has 8 limbs and he has 8 rooms.
Well, I think Admiral Fiswick is implying that. I think I am implying that. What is your relationship with Vryn?
He's a fairly new arrival by my standards, by most anyone's standards, honestly. I don't particularly care for him.
Well, it seems as if he's trying to take advantage of the increasing population around here.
Certainly. I also think he's kind of creepy, so there's that.
Well, I think that everyone has something that is worthwhile to learn about them as a person, and perhaps if you knew him better, you might feel differently, but I can also think that it is completely within the realm of reason to be bothered by someone coming and opening a business to similar to your own. I will admit, I appreciate the atmosphere of your place is very, very welcoming.
I suppose I'm maybe a little bit nostalgic. For a real long time there, it was pretty much just me and Florin here.
Hmm. You and Florin have been friends for a long time?
Yeah, and for the first couple of years this town existed, it was essentially three buildings, and I own one and Florin owned another, so...
Florin owns a building?
Yeah, it's an apothecary. It's right next door to here. Hmm. It'll open up in the morning. It's where she sells those little cookies she gave your friend here.
Was she the first one of her kind here?
What do you mean here?
Well, you said that it was just you two.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she showed up all by herself.
Hmm.
That sort of relates to what I was going to ask. What about that person, the hooded person that's with her? What's their story? Are they, a friend of yours?
Yeah. Her name's Allegheny. Old friend of mine. She's been out of town for quite some time. And just made her way back in. Florin's kind of showing around the place.
And this person is Allegheny, you said?
Allegheny, yeah.
They're from the area or they're coming from overseas?
I'm not sure exactly where they've been in the interim, but originally overseas, they were an old friend of ours. And were gone for a little while. They're back in town now.
Oh, and they're like, what, are they a wood elf as well? Or
No, Allegheny's human. Hey, listen, y'all, it's getting pretty late. I'm probably going to turn in just a couple minutes. You want to finish your drinks and head up to your room? Or,
of course, right.
If there's anything else I can get you, let me know. But otherwise, I think I'm going to close up shop.
I give him a generous tip, and I say, well, you'll understand. I wish no offense. I would have loved to have taken one of your rooms, but I'm an old man, and I can't sleep on the floor of a room with another person anymore.
Oh, no, I certainly understand it.
But I'll be back here tomorrow night.
Cool. So, Pip, do you head upstairs, or what do you do?
Yeah, Pip is definitely intrigued by the fact that when she brought up the friend, it sort of, the conversation died pretty quickly, but she's not going to push the matter. She does have some tact, sometimes, so she's going to sort of stretch out and, have a bed, I guess.
Bruce hears Pip's door close, and he, like, opens his door and sort of slinks over to her door. And gives it a very gentle knock.
Oh, I imagine Pip is snoring up a storm. But I assume a harder knock would probably get her up. But I need to roll for that.
I think it's cool.
It's okay if you want to stay sleeping, Pip.
Yeah, all right. I wake up. And I go and open the door. And I guess I look over Bruce's head first.
Bummer.
And sort of look down and go, what's going on there?
Pip, good evening. Lovely to see you again.
Bruce?
I wanted to apologize for what perhaps was a bit brusque of me at the bar, a bit curt of me at the bar, by ways of apologizing, perhaps is too strong of a word, but by ways of extending friendship in your general direction, I wanted to offer you. And Bruce pulls out the small flask that he hands up to you.
Oh.
Now I know how you drinking downstairs went. I was there. I just wanted you to know that this flask is an ancient dwarven secret to cure even the most topsy-turvy of evening revelries. So if you're not feeling great, I wanted to offer this to you.
Pip, she takes the flask, stares at it for a long moment, and then sort of gets, not teary, but she's very clearly touched, and she goes, "Aw, Brucey, you didn't have to get me anything."
All right, that's enough. That's all right. That's more emotion than I was hoping for.
No, Brucey, come in here.
Oh, man.
Pip tries to pull Bruce into a hug.
I would say because Bruce is shorter, there's a lot of, like, grumbling that goes on. And I guess I would hope that Pip would take a knee to hug him.
Yeah, no, I think Pip would need to get onto both knees for a hug.
Oh, great. Okay, mm-hmm. While we're embraced, Bruce whispers into your ear, I notice you have a knack for finding big things.
Pip starts out with, yeah, and then sort of realizes you're whispering. Goes,
yeah, I love big things. What do you mean?
Well, big things and I are pretty simpatico, as they say back on the coast. I just wanted to ask you, as we carry on with our time here together, to keep your eye out for particularly giant things, and let me know if you see something I don't.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm an expert tracker, so I might, you know, I might find something before you, or see something before you, but yeah, I'll let you know.
Yeah, you might. I would be indebted to you, my good friend Pip.
Good friend? Oh, Percy!
All right, that's more emotion than I saw before.
She jokingly goes in for another hug, knowing that Bruce is not a fan.
Hey, leave me alone. I'm just trying to be friendly. No reason to get touchy.
Oh, okay. All right, well, yeah, I'll keep an eye out for any wink, and does a very obvious wink as she says wink, wink,
and then goes and thanks for the whatever this is. I'll take a swig at it and see what happens in the morning.
I look forward to seeing you then. And he waddles away.
Pip salutes him and heads back into bed, fully intending to swig the whole thing.
That was really good. I love it. Alex, you are headed to the Tangled Web?
Yes, she is.
Great. You open the door. Bryn, basically, as far as you can tell, does nothing but stand at the bar and, like, wait for people to make entrances so that he can talk to them dramatically. Like, he's literally not doing anything. He looks up at you as you enter and says, well, back already.
Yes, of course. It's getting late and I've had quite an energetic night, and I suppose I should go off to bed.
Wonderful. Would you like the room on its own, or can I interest you in a quick bite?
I think that I might pay for the room tonight and perhaps indulge with the venom at a later day. I'm tired.
Awesome. You go ahead and pay for that, and then he hands you a key to a room upstairs. They are indeed ludicrously nice.
Yes. I do quietly ask him before I go up to my nice room, do you have the memory of a sunset after victory? Sunrise after victory.
Sunrise after victory. I don't think I've seen that one.
Good night.
Good night.
And you head upstairs.
In unfamiliar beds, Pip, Bruce, and Fizzwig drift off into an uneasy sleep, well-deserved after a profoundly odd day. Out by the docks, Juliet Scrum cannot sleep for obvious reasons. She sets to work mending the cracked boards of the ship's deck. It's something Captain Trundle taught her to do, but she didn't think she'd have to do it alone just yet. She thinks they'll be spending a few extra days in port. Around 2 a.m., she's joined by Countess Abelard. Having dropped the physician, his hands tied, and a broken mask still affixed to his face into a makeshift jail cell, she sets to work helping Juliet clean the remaining red ooze off the deck. Elsewhere in Thornpaw, just barely visible in the moonlight, a woman in a blue and white tunic with a spiked shield on her arm makes her way to the roof of the physician's office. She jumps from one rooftop to another, carefully avoiding Florin's home until she perches on the ridge of a thatched roof, a perfect vantage point to stare into the windows of both Grimble's Grotto and the Tangled Web. Her eyes flick from Pip to Bruce to Fizzwig and back again, over and over again for nearly an hour. She studies them all carefully, sighs heavily, then jumps down to the dirt road below. It's a long walk home.